My name is Liane Schmaal. I'm an associate professor at Origin and the Center for Youth Mental Health of the University of Melbourne, where I lead the Mood and Anxiety Disorders Research Program. Our review focused on examining the link between inflammation and depression in young people. As we know from the adult literature in adults with depression, that there is a link, that many people with depression show symptoms or signs of high levels of inflammation. Not everyone, but some people do. But there is less known about this potential link or association in young people. So we were interested in kind of summarizing everything that is known about this in our review. Current treatments, and especially kind of the gold standard treatments, antidepressants, cognitive behavioral therapy, they work for some people, but not everyone. So there is a continued need for alternative treatments or additional treatments to offer to young people. Therefore, also a need to look at additional mechanisms, for example, biological mechanisms such as inflammation. So in our review, we first looked at the immune system. So what is the immune system? And interestingly, the immune system undergoes a lot of changes during adolescence. And adolescence is also a peak period in which onset of depression peaks together with young adulthood. So there's an interesting link there. In our review, we basically found that there is subtle evidence for this link between inflammation and depression in young people, although there were also quite some inconsistencies in the findings. But almost half of the study showed higher levels of inflammation in young people with depression compared to healthy controls, and other half of the studies found lower levels. So this could be due to methodological differences, but we also think that it might be due to heterogeneity of depression. So one of the ideas that we had was that there might be different pathways towards depressive symptoms, where both kind of higher levels and lower levels of these cytokines could contribute to depressive symptoms in young people. And I think two interesting findings. One is that the link is bidirectional. So it seems that, you know, higher inflammation may be due to underlying health issues or unhealthy lifestyle could lead to the feelings of depression, but also depression itself can kind of lead to high levels of inflammation. And the other interesting finding was that some groups seem to be more vulnerable to having inflammation. So, for example, females with depression were more vulnerable than males. Also, young people who had a clinical diagnosis of depression, we couldn't really find much evidence for an association between depressive symptoms, but not clinical levels of depressive symptoms in the general population and inflammation. And also, people who have experienced adverse events during childhood were more vulnerable, and it seemed to be that inflammation was associated with more specific symptoms of depression, like fatigue, appetite changes, maybe changes in sleep, more so than, for example, other symptoms like affect or cognition related to depression.
So welcome, Liane and Yara, to the podcast. It's really good to have you here to talk about this active ingredient, and it's quite different from a lot of the other active ingredients we've explored in the podcast. I guess we've seen a lot of international interest in inflammation and mental illness in the last few years. There's been a lot of research published in this area. Is it an area that you've kind of been interested in professionally for a long time, or have you come to it recently? What was it that made you decide to focus on this in the first place?
I think we're I'm mostly interested in it because in adults there have been some research already on the link between inflammation and depression, and specifically between specific depressive symptoms like Liane just mentioned and inflammation. But in young people there wasn't much known about it, and there were a few other findings from the literature that did show that there is a link between the two. So, for example, people with inflammatory diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis show a higher prevalence of depression, or people who get immunotherapy to treat, for example, cancer, often develop depressive symptoms. And like Liana mentioned, the current treatments in young people aren't always effective. So it could be that inflammation is, for some people, an underlying biological mechanism, and those people might benefit better from a different treatment. I think that spiked our interest.
Tell me a bit more, Yara, about what you found then with your review, what the evidence was that you found, and did that support what you thought about inflammation and depression in young people?
I think it did and didn't support what we thought. I think the link wasn't as strong in young people as in adults, maybe because in adults the depression has had more time. It's maybe more severe than in young people because, for example, we didn't find a link between inflammation and healthy young people that did show some depressive symptoms. But we did find the inflammatory dysregulation in young people that is with depression that is found in adults. But those results were inconsistent, so not all studies found it, and for especially with IL-2 and interferon gamma, there were some inconsistent findings going in different directions. And I think that that led to the idea that maybe there are different inflammatory subtypes. So it's not just one type of inflammation that is linked to depression, but and it's not just a few people that show that association with inflammatory dysregulation, but maybe there are subtypes within those people as well. So there would definitely be more research needed on that to draw any conclusions about those subtypes.
Can you give us an explanation for how this happens, how these differences in cytokines that you're talking about actually lead to depression, or how depression in some way is linked to these differences?
It's interesting, like inflammation, you could almost see it like it's a warning sign of your body. So it kind of tells you, hey, something is wrong, something is going on here. So inflammation is linked to a lot of diseases, for example. It's usually not like an underlying cause. It's more like a warning sign. And there's many different pathways that can lead to inflammation. So for example, chronic stress. So the pathway from, for example, depression to inflammation could be that because of chronic stress, there's all these bodily changes, hormones, ongoing that can actually lead to inflammation in the body. But there's also, we also know that things like cardiovascular diseases, unhealthy lifestyles, obesity, they can also, or maybe even sleep dysregulation, they can also lead to inflammation, which in turn can lead to depressive symptoms. So inflammation, it's interesting because it could be a treatment target, but it doesn't exactly tell us what is the cause. We still need to dig a bit deeper to see, okay, but why does someone have inflammation? Is it because of the depression, or is there a different underlying cause that might, you know, lead to inflammation, which in turn leads to depressive symptoms? So I think that is very important to kind of understand better.
So where does that leave us, do you think, in terms of preventing and treating depression as early as possible? Do you think inflammation is a kind of important warning sign that depression might be about to occur?
Not always, because depression itself or chronic stress can also lead to inflammation. So it doesn't always go from inflammation to depression. I don't think, you know, generally anyone with inflammation, because it could be an underlying physical illness, that everyone who has a physical illness leading to inflammation is at risk for depression. I don't think that's the case. But I do think if young people have depressive symptoms or present with depression, it might be good to screen for inflammation just to see, is there something going on? in the immune system, which might be, you know, I mean, at the moment, there's not a lot of treatments targeting inflammation have been tested in young people. So it's not that we don't know the evidence for it, whether such treatments actually improve depression or even inflammation in young people with depression. But I think it would be important to screen young people with depression for inflammation, because it could definitely inform treatment.
And do you think that's a big difference in thinking from people who first see young people with depression in the health system, family practitioners, or I guess even, you know, parents and teachers, the idea that they need to look at a physical thing?
Yeah, I think it is. It is a bit of a shift in thinking. But on the other hand, you know, we're also more and more interested and open to the idea that, for example, people's lifestyle or, you know, physical fitness or other things can contribute. So it's not just like a psychological. I think we're already more open to the fact that it's not just a psychological problem, but that it kind of interacts with lifestyles, physical health.
And I would just like to add to that, that it doesn't have to be a complete shift. It could also be that you can still focus on the psychological part, but in addition, if someone shows inflammatory dysregulation, also treat the inflammation.
So let's talk a bit about how you did this review, because I guess this project as a whole, the Wellcome funded active ingredients reviews, it's quite an interesting project because there were researchers from all over the world. There are about 30 topics that they explored, and the way they asked you to do the reviews maybe was slightly different from other funding bodies. There was a particular focus on working with young people throughout and kind of co-producing the review. So how did you find doing that?
I think compared to the other kind of active ingredients, because it was so biological, it was a little bit more tricky to involve young people from the start. So in our active ingredients, we got a lot of input from young people on how to best kind of communicate these findings to a general public. And that was actually really useful because, you know, you also don't want to portray kind of the image that, you know, every young person with depression has inflammation and you should just buy some aspirin or over-the-counter medication from the pharmacy and this is how you can treat your own depression. So we got a lot of useful insights from young people on how to kind of communicate this, and I think that was very useful.
It also made us think a bit better about how other people might read it, because for us it was quite obvious that it's only about a subset of people, but clearly we didn't get that message across clearly. And yeah, it is really important that you can't just use some aspirin and you feel fine again. So that, I think that was the main focus of the youth advisors.
What did they think of what you found? Was it a surprise to them or did it make sense?
I think it was in line with what you said, that they found it really interesting that there's also a biological mechanism. There can be a biological mechanism behind the depression, and that it was such biologically focused and not just focused on psychology.
Yeah, we're also doing a lot of neuroimaging work, and some young people, it might actually be reassuring that, you know, there might be some kind of physical element to it, or some people see it as less stigmatizing. But it's, yeah, I think it's more as a holistic kind of picture. I think people were quite interested in not just the biological mechanism, but also the link with lifestyle, diet, exercise, these kind of influences on physical health and in turn on depression.
Is there anything that you've kind of, you can say, you know, doing research in this way, doing a review in this way, actually involving young people in the process makes it different?
It's incredibly helpful and useful to include young people with depression, you know, from early stages of any research project. And like you said, we've done this, we do this at Origin a lot. It's actually one of the requirements to do any project at Origin to involve young people. And it could be from conceptualizing the study all the way to kind of communicating the findings. And I think for us, in this specific study, it was more towards the communicating the findings. But, you know, as researchers, I mean, in the end, you do the research for the young people that actually suffer from depression because you want to help them. So it's essential to be able to communicate these findings very well to them. And I think we've learned a lot about, you know, especially kind of such a biological difficult topic, complex kind of systems. How can you really explain this in a nice, easily to understand way? I think that's critical, because you can do all the research you want, but if it doesn't reach, you know, the people that you're actually trying to help, then there's a massive gap.
What I've noticed is that involving young people from the start in the actual, you know, writing of the question and the kind of scoping of the review is a lot easier if you're doing something which is more accessible and young people can understand. If it's a biological project or a project that links physical and mental, as yours does, the young people's involvement tends to be around the dissemination. And I wonder if that's a challenge that we can put to you and other researchers working in this domain. Is it possible to involve young people earlier on? How can we do that? You know, do you think you learned anything in your review and in doing this process that can involve young people more in the whole project?
That's a very difficult question. We thought about this a lot, how to involve young people more from the start. And I think, I mean, the issue with this was that it was a review. So I think it's a little bit easier if it's a new project. If we would have, for example, you know, investigated ourselves whether young people with depression have signs of inflammation. So because here we just looked at the existing literature, it was a bit more tricky to involve young people from the start. Having said that, we could have, I think, had a slightly different approach. So at the moment, we only looked at, you know, the published studies. We summarized all the studies that have been published on this topic. But, you know, it would have also been interesting, I think, to maybe interview young people. Maybe around more generally, what is their opinion about, you know, or feelings towards biological mechanisms and that as an explanation for depression? Do they feel that is a useful way of thinking? Does that help them? Or is that, you know, by reducing stigma, or is that more deterministic? So it's not helpful at all. I think that could have been really interesting. And also, I think, to get a bit more insights from young people about some specific depressive symptoms. So, for example, we found the link between inflammation and some symptoms more than others. So, like I said before, fatigue, appetite, dysregulation. So it would have been also quite interesting to hear from young people with lived experience whether they have those symptoms and what they think drive those symptoms. So I think we missed a bit of an opportunity here, and I think there would have been scope probably to include more young people from the start. But again, it's easier if it's a new project than just summarizing the literature.
So let's talk about implications. And I guess we're interested in implications that this work has for practice, you know, and you've mentioned a couple of those already, I think, but also implications for future research. Yara, do you want to start off by telling us what you think the implications are for people working in mental health practice, first of all?
at the moment, for people working in mental health, the implications are mostly that it would be good to be aware of these possible underlying inflammation. In the future, I think it would be great if people, young people, could be screened to see if they have high levels of inflammation, and to see if specific anti-inflammatory treatment could help that. However, not much research on that has been done yet. Most of the research on anti-inflammatory medication has been done in adults, and it seems promising, but I think there's some more research needed in young people to be really able to use it in practice. And like Liana mentioned, if people can be screened based on specific symptoms, that could be even easier to then, if those symptoms are linked to inflammation, it could be easier that if people show those symptoms, that they could potentially receive anti-inflammatory treatment, or it doesn't even have to be medication. It could also be focused on lifestyle changes. So, for example, exercise or diet. But a critical next step is first to further look into those pathways and the relationship to those symptom profiles in young people.
And Liana, what do you think in terms of future research? What are the kind of priority questions that you think we should be tackling next?
Yeah, I think one, what I mentioned before, I think it's really important to understand what is kind of causing inflammation in young people with depression. So, and not everyone has shows inflammation. But I think, like I said, it's more like a warning sign, and it could be anything. So I think there's actually two really important next steps. One is to test different anti-inflammatory treatments. And like Yara said, that's not just anti-inflammatory medication, but it could be omega-3, lifestyle changes, diet, etc. Because at the moment, we can screen young people for inflammation, and that might tell us a little bit about, okay, we might need to do something additional to CBT, antidepressants. There's a little bit of evidence in adults that, you know, antidepressant might work less well in young in people with depression who also show inflammation. But at the moment, because we don't have any evidence for effectiveness of anti-inflammatory treatments in young people, we can screen them, but we don't know what to offer them. So I think that's a very critical next step, to have more RCTs with anti-inflammatory treatments for young people with depression. So that's one area that is really important. And the other area, I think, is, like I said, we need to better understand the pathway. So not all young people with depression show inflammation. So why do some young people show high levels of inflammation, others don't? What is the underlying cause or pathway towards it? Because if we understand those pathways better, we can also better target it with treatment. So if, for example, the underlying pathway is more obesity related, you would offer a different treatment than if it's more related to chronic stress or different kind of pathways. So I think that's critical in order to better kind of provide or offer young people the right treatments. We need to understand the pathways better.